With our special guest, Dr. Joseph Gallenberger, we're talking liquid luck. We're also talking heaven is for healing. And we're also taking your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're going to take your calls about luck and about, of course, heaven is for healing. Joseph, in New Zealand, they have the highest youth suicide rate in the world. I wonder what's happening over there.
I don't know. I wasn't aware of that fact. And don't know too much about New Zealand. Have you seen anything relating it to anything particular?
No, it just says they call it the silent epidemic out there.
Huh.
It's
yeah.
just, it's, it's.
I'll tell you, here in the U.S., it's very hard to even know what's going on. We bury the statistics. We know there's been, of course, lots of drug OD going on. Our veterans are having a high
PTSD,
suicide rate.
Sure. What about bullying in social networking? We saw this recent case
yeah.
where this young girl was convicted over the suicide death of her boyfriend.
Yeah.
They claimed that she helped push him and coax him into basically doing it. Is that growing too? Social networking pushing kids to the brink?
I think social network. If you can remember, I have very dim memories. Maybe I try to block them out. But when you're 11 to 18, you're very, very sensitive to what everybody's thinking of you and are you fitting in and all of that stuff. I can only imagine now with any mistake you make being filmed and then put around the world in the presence maybe of parents who are not very supportive or too busy, and isolation in general and stress in general going up, it's a witch's brew that's not therapeutic, that's for sure. I think social networking around, say, the hurricane and Harvey, and I have some friends, say, with illnesses, and they get on a GoFundMe state, it can result in tremendous outpouring of compassion to you. But at the same token, on the teenagers, it can really have a dark side.
Do you think teenagers are under more pressure than we were when we were kids? Because I don't remember or recall doing the things that my kids have done and that other kids have done in terms of, the drug situations that are out there and everything else, the drinking. I'm sure it was around during my time. I must have been some kind of a straight nerd kid or something, but I think things have changed. Maybe television has changed people. I don't know. There's something there that has created this ability for younger kids to want to do some of these very dangerous things.
I think, culture has changed. I was raised near the New York area, and there was plenty of trouble you could get into if you wanted to. Parenting probably was a little more strict at that time. I personally am very leery about what video games have done in terms of cutting down barriers about killing somebody or killing yourself, with all the shooting and stuff that, is being seen through video games and things like that. I think the preciousness of life, some of the boundaries we used to have, naturally, we would have boundaries where we wouldn't even say yeah to our parents. You'd have to say yes, ma'am, yes, sir. So things have loosened up, and then we are under great stress geopolitically. In the 2 years since I've talked to you, lots of things going on that I think the culture is more of a pressure cooker now. I was raised at the time where we had duck and cover because there could be nuclear war.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I remember those days.
That
we hid under desks. I don't know how that was going to help us, but that's
that
what they did.
Yeah, that could be blamed, for things. That's definitely pressure. But the kinds of pressures now are different, and they are conducive to lots of experimentation, impulsivity, and less inhibition, I think. It's a great opportunity, too. There's kids now 14 years old become millionaires overnight on an invention they put out on the internet.
Huh.
Everything is heated up, bad and good, from my point of view.
We're going to take calls with Dr. Joseph Gallenberger about liquid luck and about, of course, Heaven is for Healing. Tell me about that title, Heaven is for Healing. How'd you come up with that?
Yes, again, as I mentioned before, I wanted to convey this is great compassion and learning on the other side, regardless of the method you've left by. So all death leads to light, if you will. It's not saying suicide is a good thing, but even with mistakes like that, if you will, we can expect to continue some spiritual growth in our be met over there with assistance.
All right, let's go to the calls. Wildcard caller Jody in New York City. Hi, Jody, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing, Jody.
It's a very interesting program. Thank you. So what I wanted to say was I wanted to mention Robin Williams, and I was very, moved deeply. I was very close to him. I mean, I didn't know him personally, but he was one of my favorite famous people, and I sort of watched him from afar and actually watched him start his dipping phase of going downhill in that way. But I think Robin was a different kind of case because I believe, I'm not sure 100%, but I believe from what I've read that he was on psychotropic drugs, and I know that psychotropic drugs from some of your programs, George, and other things I've read, that psychotropic drugs make you either kill other people or kill yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a very sort of sad thing. But I think the thing I wanted to mention about Robin is that I was wondering if you have any thoughts about what happens on the other side. I know your point of view. You think heaven is for healing, and I actually agree with that. My sister died, and I went to a psychic to talk to her, and they told me that she was being healed on the other side because she had issues, whatever. But I was wondering what you think happens to people who kill themselves from psychotropic drugs, which is kind of like they're unconscious on some level of actually knowing that they're actually killing themselves because they're kind of lost in the drug. So I was wondering, you know, what you could say about that, of your opinion.
Well, Robin Williams' death affected me deeply too, and I think many people around the world, because it brought such joy and he had such talent. Best I understood, he was facing, knowing some medical issues were coming up, Parkinson or something. The drugs can be very helpful, but they also can create problems. That's that area of diminished capacity. What I see on the other side, to get to your main question, would be it seems to be quite individually tailored. In that idea of a few weeks to live with terminal cancer pain, it might be kind of a dusting off and seeing what would have been there if you had stayed. With very deep depression, it looks like the soul may even be put in kind of a coma-like state for months to years and be worked with unconsciously while they're pretty unconscious to begin to alleviate some of the dysfunction in their mental capacities. Eventually, as they wake up, if you will, they are held compassionately through a life review. It might be you could think about going to a movie theater and being held by angels as you watched what your life would have been like with different choices if you decided to remain and finish out the life to its natural end, those kind of things. Other people, believe it or not, who are more intellectual, might be first put in kind of a university setting and learn the, referring to the guest before, kind of the physics, quantum physics of love, of how the world works, how emotional life as humans work, in almost an intellectual way. My brother took, that's not the way to go. He was wistful. He wanted to come back quickly. They advised him to just observe for a while his family and me and how we handled life. He got to relive with my mother and father after they died a few years after he did, kind of relive the part of his life from 18 to 20 that was a critical choice point for him, to see how it would have gone differently if he had done things differently then. And now he's looking at reincarnating. And one surprise to me was they said that people who've had a very rough time here sometimes are reluctant to come back. And so they have these simulated lives available, almost like a lucid dream, where you can feel as if it was real, but you don't have a physical body. And because of that, your problems aren't encoded into your very DNA, and it's a little easier to stay in touch with spiritual guidance, if you will. And he's actually seeming to, he jokes a lot, and he says this will be Olympic training for when I come back and have a physical body again. I'm going to have some of these simulated lives first to see how I do in them. So there's a big variety of things available as ways to learn on the other side, from best I can tell.
Joseph, what about suicide by recklessness, by doing silly things that you know eventually you're going to catch up with you?
Yeah, that happens too, you know. I was in a body cast for almost a year and skeletal traction after a motorcycle accident when I was 21.
Ugh.
And I could have easily died. My helmet was misshapen like an egg. I went out of body and saw my body flopping in the street. So I got close there. And other times, just a kind of a poor judgment. One time I was weed whacking at sunset and not watching what I was doing and ran over a bee's nest and got stung multiple times.
I remember
anaphylaxis. Both of those could have taken me out, and both were kind of accidental but careless, as you say. So again, what seems to be most important on the other side is what kind of mental, spiritual, emotional condition you come in there. If you're, say you've been murdered and you've forgiven the murderer, your situation's going to be different than if you're murdered and all you want is to get revenge.
But I mean, someone like John Belushi, who died of an overdose.
Yeah.
Was that suicide by recklessness? I mean, was there at any point that the guy would have said to himself, if I keep doing this, I'm going to kill myself?
I don't know him personally, but sure, many people in that situation, you know, in our heroin addiction now in this country, most know that at some point the end point of this is either death or jail.
Yeah.
And but, you know, things get going, and when they do, we know more neurophysiologically now that the pleasure centers and the front brain judgment centers and how they relate to each other begin to weaken to such of an amount that the person's, you could call them insane in terms of their judgments out of touch with reality. You know, so maybe somebody in that situation might think, well, that happens to everybody else but not me. Who knows? But yes, I think, you know, in the longer range things like being heavily overweight or smoking or what have you, also, you know, you're kind of playing with this area of destruction, and you may accidentally go a little further than you think you're going to.
Let's go to Alex, first-time caller in Indiana. Hello, Alex. Good morning.
Good morning, George, and hey, Joe.
Good morning.
My girlfriend's brother died, or killed himself as well, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know how she can cope with that and how I can help her cope with that.
That's a very good question. I'm glad you asked it. Suicide is very difficult for most people, their loved ones left behind. It has the problems of sudden death, but also this woulda, coulda, shoulda, if we'd done things any differently.
Right, or if I'd seen this and that.
Yes, and that can be just agonizing. I felt like after my brother died, I had a broken heart, if you will, and I did develop a CD called Ocean Heart to have a different image. Where our heart is a vast ocean of love, and if you come into my heart, you're enveloped completely, and if you go, the water goes back to complete, perhaps losing a drop.
And Joseph, how do you think I felt when I knew that my loan to my friend contributed to his life insurance, and then he killed himself for it?
Yes, yes. I picked that up when you told the story that, much like, you know, my lending money to my brother or something, you wonder then, if I hadn't done that, you know, what would have happened? So these things, it's so isolating. When I went to the funeral for my brother, my whole family was in such grief that we walked out the side door of the church and never saw the 100 people in back willing to console us. So the first thing I'd recommend to help your friend is to help them not isolate, and to let them talk about things over and over about the guilt they may feel, and not just immediately go, oh, it wasn't your fault, but listen to their reasoning and then hopefully gently reason them to know that, you know, if this was to be, nobody may have been able to stop it, those kind of words. To encourage them to get going with something that would be healing, like being in the beauty of nature, listening to beautiful music, if they have a spiritual life, to access that. But to also know that, you know, our culture says any death a year, you should be over it. And my wife lost a child at 6 to brain cancer. She said, Jill, if you ever go on these shows, one thing you need to destroy is that myth of a year grief. And with suicide, too, that your friend may take a good while to get through this, and that's okay. What you're looking for is them not getting stuck in something like blaming themselves or others, but rather moving through the stages of grief, which can include anger, depression, many things, but it should have some fluidity to it. They should move along, if you will.
Have you ever seen a point, Joseph, where someone commit suicide because someone they loved committed suicide?
Definitely. It's quite contagious.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And my reaction was the opposite. When my brother died, very quickly I was aware of anger toward him because he took that option away from me forever because I saw how much damage it did to my family.
Do you think of it as a cop-out?
I don't. I think it can be, you know, again, these things are highly individual. With him and many, many people that I know who've been struggling a long time with depression, they just get so tired. They can see no more options. They feel like they've tried everything and the world would be better off without them. It's distorted thinking. You know, my wife's boss did this and left 3 small children.
Ugh.
And people say, how could they be so selfish? These kids need him. But from his point of view, I'm sure it was the world would be better off without me. Their thinking is that distorted. And so again, I would, as I did earlier, recommend we not judge. And the folks who are left, the loved ones, that's a tough thing not to try to judge
it
what
sure
happened,
is.
You know.
Joseph, we're going to come back in a moment with final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Joseph Gallenberger with us. We'll get to your final calls also in just a second. So, Joseph, do you continue with the liquid luck type research?
Yes. We've been working a lot, particularly studying the MC Squared group up at Monroe Institute with University of Virginia. I think it's called Department of Perceptual Studies, and we're getting some significance there. On showing that PK, when we send energy for healing and for affecting matter, is, you know, something we can measure. So we're doing that. I continue to get stories out of Liquid Luck, book and CD of miracles for folks coming in terms of what they manifest. And as I mentioned, I'm still going out to Vegas. The next one will be February, and I think it'll be our 86th workshop out there.
Now, when you do, you actually go into casinos. Do they know you're coming?
Yes, they do. You got to have a good house, as they call it. You know, some places will hassle you if you win, but good casinos don't mind winners. It helps inspire everybody else that it's possible. And
as long as you don't win too much.
we play for small amounts because it's not the main point is to make a killing. The main point is to show the feedback that this stuff works.
And again,
fine with that.
How much of it is attitude? Being smart is one thing. Understanding, as we talked about earlier, money management, not being greedy. Yeah. But how much of it is simply being attitude?
I'd say 80-20.
Really? That high?
Know, that 80% is the attitude, 20% is knowing the rules and knowing the other things. So I would rather play with somebody who had a great attitude and had no idea what they're doing besides that, versus somebody who knew all the rules down pat but had a poor attitude.
I think I had mentioned this some time ago when we talked about Liquid Luck, but when I was at an event in Las Vegas several years ago with producer Tom Danheiser, after the event was done, he wanted to play a little blackjack. So we sat down to play, and this particular table, it's really different, had a spinning wheel with numbers on it. So if you got a blackjack, you had the right to have the dealer spin the wheel, and whatever it clicked on, you would win that too.
Okay.
And it was up to like $1,000 on the clicks.
Okay.
You know, $1, $5, stuff like that. And so I'm playing, Tom's playing, and there's some guy playing in the middle who's just so negative about everything. And I get a blackjack. And so that entitles me to a free spin.
Yeah.
on this wheel. So I said to Tom, let's concentrate on the $1,000. Because, you know, out of like 50 slots, that there was $1,000 thing. And he said, okay, we'll do that. So the dealer spins this reel, Joe. And I'm concentrating on the $1,000. Tom's concentrating on the $1,000. And the guy in the middle goes, not going to happen. Won't happen. This is baloney. It stopped one click short of $1,000. He did it to us, didn't he?
He could have rattled your chi, as we would say.
His psychokinesis screwed us up.
Put up such a aura around yourself that, A, you don't attract those people, and, B, if they're there, it just flies right over your head. You don't listen to them. Because I've seen that many times, but you can override that with your light, if you will, if he wants to be dark about it. But you gotta, if you're not used to that, it'll probably throw you off.
Let's go to Brenda, West Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hey, Brenda, go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Great, thank you.
I got a few things to say about suicide. All through my teenage years, I was suicidal. Had a rotten childhood, but over the years I was disabled. I'm 59 years old now, and my doctor, my PCP, says that I'm the most complicated medical case that he has. So I got a lot of things wrong with me. Take a handful of pills every day, and which I hate. But he keeps telling me, you know, that I'm depressed, and I'm like, yeah, well, it wouldn't be, but I'm wondering, I just don't want to take any more drugs. And the side effects to a lot of the drugs for suicide just seems too risky for me. And he keeps saying, I need this, I need this, I need this. And I'm like, well, you know, I haven't killed myself yet, you know. I mean, how bad is it going to be? Do I really need it? My husband died a few years ago. And there's no doubt in my mind that I'm depressed. And I mean, like I said, who wouldn't be? But all the women in my family died of cancer. I'm the only one left. I mean, I just keep waiting for my number to pop up, you know, and I haven't killed myself yet, so.
No rush yet, Brenda. There's no
well,
rush.
You know.
Glad you're sticking it out. And, you know, I think it's a disservice to give people drugs if by themselves. I think people, if it's serious enough to be recommending drugs, that you should also be in some good psychotherapy with somebody who really knows what they're doing and feels very...
It's just hard to do. I live out in the country by myself, and
yeah.
I'm all alone in the world, so to speak, and living on disability, you know, that makes...
You've got us, Brenda. You've got us.
I know. I don't know what I do with that, you guys. I listen to your show every night.
Disability comes with Medicare, Medicaid.
Yeah.
So you can get services through that.
I'm to the point now where I would give anything just to let me be their guinea pig, just to see if anything could get any better, you know.
I would be very confident things could get better, but getting some help from folks, you know, given it's been going on as long as it has, I really recommend it would be a wise thing to do.
Sure, sure. What's the first start? Who do you go to, Joseph? A psychiatrist? What do you do?
Well, I think, you know, you're... position often is used to somebody who's getting, as a therapist, good results. Your minister may know somebody. Most places, if you call a state, will have a psychological association. And so those kind of places, as well as even friends, you know, who say, hey, I had trouble in my marriage or whatever. I went to this person. They're not crazy. They really helped me. They were knew what they were doing. But, you set out the notice that I need to find somebody, much like finding somebody to fix your roof or anything else. Sure. Takes a little bit of research, you know, to get somebody who's likely to be good. But it's your life and your happiness, so it's well worth the time and effort to try and even have a session or two with more than one person until you find somebody that you feel like you really link up well with, and they treat you with dignity, they understand what you're going through, and they're making decisions or recommendations that seem to make sense to you.
What do you think of people who egg somebody else on who's on the top of a building, and they're all down below going, jump, jump, jump? What's wrong with those people?
Yeah, I'd say that's an abomination. If I were there, I would be giving them some feedback.
Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, Joseph.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask Mr. Gellenberger, now, do you have any theories on how to sustain a positive attitude, say, in the face of either health problems or financial difficulties?
Sure.
What works?
Sure. Got to be realistic, at least for me. You know, just the British stiff upper lip doesn't work, and Pollyanna kind of thing. So I would look at what I do have. If that's a pet that I like, if it's a couple of friends, if my legs work but my arms don't, whatever list you can make of inventory of your assets, if you will, and give some gratitude for them. Of course, trying to find the best medical care and things, including alternative. But on an emotional basis, some of the things George mentioned, the home study course, Sync Creation, that I have. It's designed to have exercises to really let go of any sense of lack and fear and guilt, trauma, those kind of things, and then to build up good positive energy. The basics I also would recommend always, as much as you can, eat real well. Get exercise, get outside, be in touch with beauty of nature, what have you. So you really are working to keep yourself up. And it can help many people to get outside themselves a bit, because illness tends to get you self-absorbed, wondering whether I'm doing the right things, what's going to happen to my body. And so if you can volunteer to help somebody else with just about anything, that can make a difference. We have something called pain gate theory, for example. If you have nothing else to focus on, the mind will take that pain and magnify it and magnify it. So it can be useful even just to get outside yourself some, even if you're, it's kind of hard to get out of bed every day, if you will. But if you're teaching some kid to swim, you'll probably get out of bed and make the appointment. Does that make sense?
How does it work, Joe? It does work. I know it works. You've tried it. I've tried it. How does it work?
Help me with what it is in this case.
It being anything that you use your state of mind to change. Luck, healing, whatever. It works.
Yes.
It works when your attitude is changing, when you're in the groove. Maybe it's just that gift from God, huh?
Well, I think, again, we're trying to pin this down better in the lab, and we haven't figured out yet what's there, but we have figured out the conditions around it. And again, this attitude of gratitude, of feeling very connected, those kind of things reliably work. You know, I've had a challenging 2 years, George. There's been some significant illnesses in my
sure.
family, other kinds of
You're
things.
A fighter. You're a fighter. Hey, Joe, we're running out of time here. But I want to thank you for being on the program, Joseph Gallenberger. He has CDs out, too, which match his books, The Ocean Heart, The Abundant Heart, The Healing Heart, Liquid Luck, just like his books. And believe me, change your attitude and watch things change. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasore, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.